So while this is loading, as I mentioned. Oh, yeah. Actually, there's a couple of ways to answer that question. One, maybe I know that Sean or the various incarnations of Sean had talked about a lot of work with spontaneous case reporting. So I think I'll defer that portion if there's anything that Sean or Sean's group would like to add on that. I think from a state health department point of view, for this particular project, we've just basically tackled looking at some chief complaint filters, maybe some real basic filters, looking at some Loink and SNOMED coding for the laboratory test results. As far as our New York State Health Department, and I think this may be part of a presentation later on in the week where we talk about the integration of our hepatitis surveillance system, is that we actually do have an electronic clinical laboratory reporting system where we actually do have full-time staff that actually do they actually work with our laboratories to do some of the coding and maintain, you know, maintain the sort of a reference within the department. But I think that's a big challenge. And as I said, I open it up to other people in the here as well, is really just standardization and keeping up with all of the changes. And it looks like Bryant will jump in.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say we've our technical resource, SAIC, built they call it the integrator, which within it has, there's a new logic component that the rules, simple or complex, can be encoded into a knowledge base, as well as a vocabulary management system that get at the integration of those SNOMED and Loink codes. I think they may be demonstrating that as part of the showcase in the booths area. But I know there are other ways to accomplish these same things, and I think we need to start looking at what are the best practices.
So Andy, I heard your question as, we knew something else was positive and now we've discovered something sort of underneath that thing that wasn't previously known to be positive but is, and you want to do some sort of association. Can you give an example of that? Because I can't think of something immediately.
Well, maybe not in, I was thinking from a clinical point of view, for example, test for diabetes, or you might say that there's a hemoglobin A1C, there's a new version of hemoglobin A1C that comes up. And yet I know that at the hemoglobin A1C test, therefore maybe it's on a certain branch, you can point to the SNOMED, and therefore my rule can be written at a level that's high enough that I don't have to keep managing all my rules every time the lab comes up with new tests. They come into the right level of the hierarchy and automatically get subsumed by the
I've got it now. So my first response is there's no completely free lunch, although there is partially free lunch. And what I mean by that is in the Loink hierarchy, one of the things that Dan Breeman, who oversees Loink at Regent Street along with Tom McDonald, creating a hierarchy of notifiable conditions within Loink. And if you happen to see a new condition map that falls within a node of reportable conditions, you can say, four of the five tests at this terminal node of this hierarchy are reportable. Gosh, this one probably is too. And so that's exactly what we're doing within one to identify.
I think another scenario that is even more timely for overworked public health folks is that the rules of what's reportable in an emergency situation like H1N1 change very, very fluidly. And we ran into the situation where we couldn't say loudly enough to stop sending us every specimen under the sun on H1N1. We only wanted the severe cases, or the pregnant cases, or the people who died. And no matter how loudly we said that, we kept getting floods of specimens into the public health lab. So being able to go and modify the rules engines that are triggering some of these events at a centralized place instead of having to rewrite them at 27 different hospitals is a critical new capability that we're welcomely embracing.
Okay. Anyway, with the talk of H1N1, I guess I'll just start off with saying, as I said, throughout this project, our initial implementation of the biosurveillance use case included influenza, ILI, and pneumonia. So the occurrence of novel H1N1 actually gave us something real and concrete to really think about, our work within this project, and I think really include the epidemiologists and a lot of the frontline public health workers who were knee-deep, if not higher, in influenza surveillance. So that's why I said I think it definitely was a call to action to put a lot of our plans and a lot of our talk into action. So the objectives for this presentation is really to describe the AHIC harmonized use case for biosurveillance and the couple of different implementations that were done by the New York Health Information Exchanges, or RIOs. We'll examine briefly the minimum biosurveillance data set, the availability and format of the data elements, and then focus on business process, data collection, and exchange processes that impact public health. So we'll talk about a little bit about the use case, the scope, and the MDS, describe the New York project, and then some of the results, and then what current and future New York activities. So as most people probably are aware, the harmonized use case for biosurveillance really includes early event detection, situational awareness, and rapid response management. It describes a process or interaction for relevant data capture, discovery, anonymization, and transmission to public health. And it was really, really just trying to identify the data and the process that you would do to actually get that data and get it to public health. The minimum biosurveillance data set, six categories of data elements that were identified, I think, back in 2006 as part of the biosurveillance work group and the steering work group. What are the data elements that would be critical for situational awareness? It factors into account availability and timeliness as well. So we actually have facility-level data elements and clinical and patient demographic data elements, and then laboratory and test order, both laboratory and infectious disease test orders and test results. So this was our universe of data elements that we were assessing as part of our use case. Our Health Information Exchange Project, as I mentioned previously on the in the other presentation, it's a CDC accelerating statewide public health situational awareness, and specifically in New York through health information exchanges. Our project team included New York State Department of Health, New York City Department of Health, and also our New York State Association of County Health Officials. Our main goal is really connecting our regional health information organizations, or RIOs, with public health through the development of a statewide health information network called the SHINE, a public health service bus, and a universal public health node. And our following presentation is that will actually be done by Jack Brady, another member of our New York project team. We'll talk a little bit more about regional health information organizations and our statewide health information structure. We are actually using this infrastructure and the regional health information organizations and our collaborations with local and state public health to actually implement public health use cases, specifically the biosurveillance use case, over the past year. For our technology development, we're actually looking, as I mentioned, for the open source reusable software package, actually having functionality built in to actually anonymize and re-identify a patient, so that way there, as Brian mentioned, so there when data is exchanged between an HIE and public health, it's not necessarily a lot of, a large amount of data or identifiable data. Also, the ability for health information exchanges or RIOs to develop a line list, to actually generate a list of patients with MDS elements for predefined criteria, maybe from that list, from that line list, be able to re-identify the patient and then go back and collect additional clinical information. So basically a patient query. And then also an analytic query, so their counts could be done for just providing counts for patients meeting the criteria. So this is how New York envisions our health information exchange interaction. As I said, Jack will probably cover more of our actual infrastructure, but this is just to give you some idea of our geographic coverage during year one. We had, I believe, five participating regional health information organizations, varying levels of participation. They were primarily out in western New York, the counties shaded in red, and then in the lower Hudson Valley. And we actually have the counties are color-coded according to population, and our areas for regional health information organizations pretty much cover the areas of the state that are most highly populated. The number of actual data exchange partners, and we'll talk about this in a little bit, was a little bit less. We actually had RIOs that implemented the use case but did not engage in data exchange. Once again, we focused our data exchange on RIOs out in western New York. That included Buffalo, Erie County, which had the highest population out in the west, and then also in New York City. So as far as the actual use case implementation, we actually had an MDS availability assessment conducted by five RIOs. They actually did an assessment early, very early on in the project, and then a follow-up assessment after they actually established, did the first one and went through the use case. The use case was implemented by four RIOs, and data exchange was established with the State Health Department by two RIOs. So we were actually, by the end of the first year, receiving data from 18 healthcare facilities and three patient classes. We actually had, for the filter implementation, we had two different models. One, we had the data filtered by the RIO, and the other one, we received unfiltered data and had filtering done at the State Health Department. Also in the first year, we actually established data exchange with New York City Department of Health. So we were providing the RIO data for New York City hospitals with New York City Health Department. You know, for the MDS assessment results, I have to say in general, almost all MDS elements are available, and I put the available in quotation marks. You know, most of this data is captured electronically. How much is available at the RIO or health information exchange level, how much is available at the facility level, and what would it take to actually access that data? Though there's a lot of complexity in that. At the very least, we identified that there were some new interfaces that needed to be developed, especially for data elements or information that was critical to public health. We also found out that there was great data that's critical to public health, but not necessarily easy to count. So some of the data fields were text or images. Timing of the availability varied. There were some data elements that were available immediately after a patient event. There were others that had a delay. So a lot of, I guess, going into the final bullet is, what is the utility of each of these data elements? One of my answers very often is, it depends. It may depend on how quickly you need that data element, or how, you know, what type of data do you need? Do you need something like chief complaint, which may be very sensitive but not very specific, or do you need something else that may have higher specificity and less sensitivity? So I think it was really, it was very, we learned a lot about the MDS data elements. As I said, most are available. It's just a matter of what it would take to actually access those and get them to public health. I thought to talk about some of these things, I would just use a graphic. This was actually a graphic that was developed by one of our RIOs that actually showed the data flow from healthcare to public health, both from within a facility health information system to an edge server used by the RIO. And the edge server in one case was located within the hospital, another one was actually located within the RIO. This one shows it, the edge server within the healthcare facility, how the data was extracted for the RIO into the HIE data center and then to public health. So a lot of our first year efforts were really working with the RIOs and identifying the data elements that were already collected and already there for specific purposes. And then also for key public health data elements, going back to the facility to try to do a little more digging on the MDS availability. once we actually had the universe of data elements that were available and ready for data exchange, we then went into the process of actually having the data formatted according to the project implementation guide, getting FinMS installed. While we were getting our infrastructure built, we had to have an alternative way to exchange data, and actually getting the data exchange to public health. So that was a lot of our process once we actually identified the data. Once public health received the data, actually once the RIO was able to provide the data to public health, we actually had to develop our infrastructure to be able to receive the data. So we put together our own data flow diagram within public health, so that there we'd actually be able to get the files, parse the messages, create files for our epidemiologists for analysis, and then doing some monitoring the data feeds, and then also doing some quality assurance and on the data that we had received and how we were communicating information back to the Regional Health Information Organization. So out of that really came engaging our RIOs and our healthcare facilities. And as I said, this was developed by one of our RIOs, is identifying where is potential for data manipulation. You know, public health asks a lot of questions. So, of course, we had our epidemiologists and our data analysts looking at the data and had a lot of questions about a lot of different things, which then really had to engage a lot of our stakeholders as part of this process, where they really took a look to see, you know, where would we be able to find answers to those questions, which identified these particular areas. So overall, I think at the end of our initial implementation of the use case, I think we're really left with looking at all of our stakeholders and trying to find from each of our stakeholders' perspective, what does availability really mean? And what are the business processes? What are the business processes for how these particular data elements are collected or used or exchanged or who they're shared with all across all of the different stakeholders? So we did find out that a lot of the ED systems were not enterprise-wide, so we actually had it develop interfaces to be able to access some of that data. I think overall, at the end of our initial implementations, we really wanted to engage more of our healthcare facility stakeholders. As I said, to look a little bit more from their perspective in terms of availability and business processes that it impacted the data exchange. So our current focus right now is we're actually engaging our healthcare facility stakeholders, so we're including them in the process of the use case implementation. So they're now part of our RIO implementation team, and it's really been great. There's a lot of information that we've learned from them, from whether it be their information systems, their applications that they use with their information systems, the business rules with those, or the business processes within the healthcare facility. Our project team and these other two bullets, the last two bullets, were really, I think, our epidemiologists and our informatics staff really working together to figure out, you know, how do we build the infrastructure, how do we develop the informatics, and also from our data users at many levels, from the local and state level. So out of this work, we initiated a data certification process that not only said we were able to get the data from A to B, but that we also had a way that we could evaluate and validate that data. So those are our current activities right now. In terms of our future activities, as I mentioned, we're developing our open source software to replace our FinMS data transport with a web service. Using our universal public health node and public health service bus. So that's another one of our large areas right now that we're working on. And then also integrating our certified data into production public health data streams. So I will end it there. That's actually being developed in-house. I don't know as far as the actual software products that we're using. Or if it's not event, you know.
You're not partnering
with. No. Jack, I don't know if you want.
Some of the Sun open source products, and I think off the top of my head, some of the other software products. We're attempting to use where we can open source software modules that we may be able to provide to our regional health information. Partners to provide the interface to
Yeah. So I guess the question, it sounds like, I don't think people in the back were able to hear the question, was more in terms of the development of our software package, that it is something that we're working in-house, and it is a package that has said it can be used as one particular piece of software, or may have different components that may be integrated into as needed. So I think there's multiple components, but we can certainly talk offline and refer you to our technical staff for any other questions that you have. Any other questions? Okay, thanks.
Okay, let's give our speakers from the last two topics a round of applause. Thank you.